Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Okay, it is episode 9, I think, of the Gringlish podcast. Yeah, 9 episodes of the Gringlish podcast. That is good. I feel like I should be holding this with something. I feel like I'm holding a microphone, but I'm not. That's not going to work. Roll the intro.
I'm Greek-Australian. That's why I look like this, but I sound like this.
So, yeah, we made it to 9 episodes. It's very busy days these days for me, to be honest. I'm filming, like, many hours a day, whether it's Emperor stuff for Yoros Moulos Instagram, whether it's this podcast, whether it's another podcast, whether it's Golden Greeks, whether it's whatever, content. Like I said, started this production company type media business, content business with the intent to, you know, build my personal brand and film more stuff that I wanted to film. So that is what we've got here, which is great. Like to be busy. The training for the triathlon has been going pretty well. I am 78.4 kilos as of yesterday. Did a big half marathon run yesterday, been dieting. Weighing 78.4. The start of this year, I was 90 kilos. So that's some good progress. Buying a triathlon bike this week. So things are getting serious, which is good. Just a little bit sick, got a cold or something, but I haven't stopped training at all. I've been training twice a day. So yeah, things have been good. Content stuff is being good too. Like, people are watching, people are enjoying it. By the sound of it, people are learning stuff from my little, you know, videos, which is fun. I have some topics here that have been submitted to me or that I have thought of or my team has thought of. So let's get into it. First question. Brutally honest advice for young Greek men. Okay. That's an easy one, because all my advice is brutal, especially when it's a young Greek man. Brutal advice to young Greek men. Learn English properly, number one. Don't even pretend like it's not important. You got to learn, okay? I know it's pretty hypocritical because my Greek is not great, but hey, I'm still doing Greek lessons. I'm still doing my Duolingo. I've learned Spanish too, by the way. I'm up to day 733 of Duolingo, so at least I'm trying, and I'm doing a Greek lesson a week, 2 Greek lessons a week for how many years now? So yeah, someone just stopped out front of my door. That was weird. Yeah, you gotta learn English and do what you can to get rid of the accent, to be honest. Like, when I left Australia, I had that pretty, like, a heavy WOG accent. Like, I talked like this, like, it's kind of disgusting when you pay for walks speak like this, and this is gross, right? And it makes you harder to understand. That's the unfortunate reality of being from places that aren't the places where you want to be, right? Like, I make most of my business with people from the US, so and New York, so, you know, as much as I can, I entrench myself in American culture, which I naturally did, with music and movies and TV. I mean, everyone in the world basically does, but it wasn't like it was difficult. So, yeah, do what you can to improve the accent. And, yeah, that's listening to music, that's watching TV, that's watching movies, all in American. That's number one. And then also the culture. Understanding a culture is a tough thing. Like, I've been in Greece now for 6 years, for half the year, each year.
And now I kind of really understand the culture and how different it is to diaspora culture. So different. It's like a different race. Yeah. Get the English thing set up. Start understanding American culture. And I think, some basic stuff I always say is like, get in the gym. Greece doesn't have a culture of athleticism and like sports, actually, doesn't. Like, I always talk about this, but in Australia, it's, you might do 3 or 4 different sports at once. I would play soccer on Saturdays, soccer for school, and then, you know, swimming training as well. Like, in Australia, they're just machines. And number three, you got to consume, you know, the right content. Don't be listening to people who sound like scammers. Just listen to people who have a proven track record of success and testimonials. That's a good start. That's what I would say, is brutally honest advice. Get your eyes on some American books, on American TV, American cinema. If that's what you, if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to have a successful career. If not, do what you're doing. Anyway, I just finished the Top Gear / Grand Tour. I just watched the Grand Tour finale. And it kind of struck me, you know, how I always love media, right? I've always loved media in general and content, whether it's, you know, media now is movies and Netflix and YouTube and Snapchat and malakias like that. But media, from a historical sense, used to be one book that the whole town reads. It would be a notice board. It would be a massive stone slab with the laws on it. I remember seeing that in some museum. I think it was in Spain. It was in Latin, and then it was in Greek, all the new laws. Like, media is ancient. Might be an ancient map. Might be a statue even is media. It's a form of media. It's anything that really translates a message or conveys a message is media. Sorry, I am looking at my emails, which is very rude. Nothing to fear. And I always look at how media changes people and how we consume it, because, you know, one, business, it's a business interest, but also just like how symbols convey messages, how actions convey messages. I've always found that interesting. And so when a whole, let's call it generation or multiple generations, are captured by one form of media, you need to, you know, look closer at that and say, why? What's so interesting about this? And so anyway, that's a long intro to say that I've loved Top Gear and the Grand Tour and Jeremy Clarkson, Richard Hammond and James May since I was a kid. Like, Top Gear started in like 2001, 2002. I would have been 4 or 5. And I remember here's the funny thing. I don't give a shit about cars. I don't care about cars at all. Maybe I have a little bit of interest in like a 1969 Mustang because my papu had that. But meh, I just don't really care about cars. I always live in big cities and I catch a train, taxi, walk, bike, train. Like, I just don't really care about cars. But that's it's a testament to these guys that they make someone who doesn't care about cars interested in cars, because I've watched Top Gear and I love the specials more than anything my whole life. The first special, now that I watched the finale, was in 2007. And now 2024, they kind of wrapped the last special up in the first special was in Botswana, which neighbors to the is to the west of Zimbabwe. And they did Zimbabwe in the special, and then they ended up in Botswana, where they started this, all the specials. And man, it's such a weird feeling to watch something end that you've grown up on, you know. And look, all my friends grew up on Top Gear and Grand the Grand Tour. The Grand Tour started in 2016, so it's been 8 years. It's not like it was a short run, even though it feels like a short run. Top Gear feels like it's ancient. But the specials are something that I rewatch religiously. Like, it's a bit paradoxical, weird, how often I watch and rewatch the same 10 Top Gear specials, whether it's Botswana, whether it's Colombia, whether it's Patagonia special in Argentina, whether it's the Mongolia special, whether it's the Scandinavian special, the French special, the, where else did they go? The Vietnam special, fuck, that was a classic. India special, the, the Bolivia special. Like, they just went on so many adventures, and you can just tell, like, look, they're going, they're doing something challenging. Like, as much as they are multi-millionaire dudes, they are also doing actually something quite tough with the cars. And I mean, you can obviously tell, like, they know a lot about cars, right? To be able to go through challenge after challenge and fix it after fixing it, fixing it, fixing it. So they're doing something challenging. They're getting paid bloody well for it, but they're doing something challenging. And that's what's fun. And the camaraderie between them is obviously hilarious. And it just makes me think, like, watching that finale, and, you know, I was like, that's, you know, been such an honor to and privilege to watch these guys do this great job over 20 years. And especially that when I'm young, you know, because I've gone on adventures my whole life. My life is pretty adventurous compared to most people's lives. I think that goes without saying, but I left home when I was young, 17, and family-wise, I have my mom and my cousin. Besides that, I actually don't see any of my family. So for me, friends are family. And going on adventures with friends has been actually a good, maybe a third of my life, right? I've been with friends going on adventures around the world, doing stuff. So maybe that's been inspired by these Top Gear stuff, and probably definitely has. But also I traveled. My mom took me on awesome holidays, and the family on awesome holidays as a kid, and that just always sparked this, you know, wanderlust to explore the world because there's so much cool shit to see. Like, I think I've said this before on the podcast, but I sometimes when I'm sad, I just think about Rome, just the city of Rome, not ancient Rome, just Rome now. And I think, because I've been to Rome maybe 5 or 6 times, and every time I leave, I still go have on the map, like, oh, there's this new site. There's this new archaeological site that I didn't find last time. It didn't go last time. They uncovered something new. So even now, there's like 7 new sites there that I want to go see. Like, it's just this city of continuous exploration. Athens, unfortunately, wasn't really a city for about 1,700 years. So they doesn't have as many layers on it, but Rome just has so many layers. And I just get inspired to learn and explore the cities again. So yeah, you know, Top Gear specials, these guys, like, when I watch a cool TV show, when I watch a cool movie, when I watch any piece of art, you know what it makes? It makes me feel two ways. One, like a loser, like, you could never create something so amazing. Wow. George, this is like, I think to myself, you could never do anything like this. This is like beyond human, like Fleabag, right? I love the TV show Fleabag. This lady, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, she...
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Season's greetings to you all from Menards. Wrote it, she stars in it, and she directs it. She did it on as a theatre, had a theatre play in the UK, like, for a long time, and then she got it on TV. And it's not good. It's goated. It's awesome. Like, how can one person do so many things really, really well? And it's, I love it. I've rewatched it so many times. I just don't understand how someone can be so talented. Now, look, I'm not beating myself up, but talent ain't my thing. I can work hard at one thing for a long time and focus, but God damn, like when I watch Dave Chappelle or if I watch Louis C.K., I throw my hands in the air because I'm like, I could never be this good. They're like gods amongst men. It's not even close. And you watch a TV, I look at portfolios of work, right? The portfolio of work that is Top Gear / Grand Tour, that's a portfolio of work of 20 years of work that they can look back and like, we have done that much work. Like, that's good work. That is a good amount of entertainment and it's high quality. Like, that's amazing. I look at Anthony Bourdain, all those TV shows, Parts Unknown and all the other names that they were called, like, this guy has a portfolio of work that is a masterpiece. And look, I'm young and I obviously like to build things. I like to create things. I've always loved to create things, whether it's businesses or YouTube videos or Instagram reels. I like to create. I like to build. And I'm very inspired by these people, is what I'm trying to say. But sometimes you watch someone, a masterpiece, full person, you're like, I could never even get close. But all you can do is make the next piece of content, you know, try something new, do something you're passionate about. So inspiration, and sad to see it end, but at least they ended it professionally on a good note. A lot of things, you know, don't end so nicely. I have this note here. Okay, next topic. I've lived in Australia for 17 years, 18 years, and now I've lived in Europe for, 2024, about 6 years. And I realize how much better life is with European seasons. Like, I sometimes even forget that Australia is, it's spring now? Like, summer in Europe is winter in Australia and vice versa, right? Like, winter for Christmas time is the best. Because you can, like, the year of work is over, right? So, like, you can just chill out with family. You have your summer, your winter holidays. You have Christmas, all this stuff. And you can actually have a break. And it's snowy. Having a snowy, cold Christmas is the best. In Australia, we have Christmas and we go to the beach and have a beer and prawns. Like, it doesn't make sense. It's so much, such a better arc of work and, like, hibernation almost. Like, in winter in Europe, I go into like a focused work mode and just work out, solitude, grind on work, and not even try and do anything else. And then summer's like, yeah, more work obviously, but summer it's hot and like it's the meat of the year is in the middle of the year. It makes more sense. Anyway, that's a weird point, but I think I'm right. What else is happening? I have a lot of little stories here, which is good. So cadet stories. So yeah, so as of right now, I have three big challenges as it stands. The triathlon 70.3 Ironman on the 20th of October. I have a comedy show that I am producing, the Gringlish comedy show, named after the same podcast and the same group of productions, here in Athens at Transistor Bar, which should be fun on the 11th of October. We're flying in a hilarious comedian, David Alfie Wolf Ward, and should be a really great show. Only 55 seats, so I think we'll be able to pack it out and then some. Excited about that. That's the second one. The third one, of course, is we are marching across the nation from Ordomenio near the Greek-Turkish-Bulgarian border all the way down to Mani. I submitted my application to the Guinness World Record books. They accepted. They sent us the evidentiary requirements. And now it's time to get to work, time to get planning. I got to book a camper van for Gael and I to sleep in. Gael is my videographer. who's going to be, one, helping with the videography, but also being the support vehicle. So we have to get that camp. I've got to book that camper van, and we have to make all these plans and lists and everything. It should take about 3 weeks. But we've done a lot of I've done a lot of planning already. Luckily, physically, I don't think it should be an issue. 40 to 60 kilometers a day for 6 to 8 hours of walking a day. Should be burning about 3,000 to 4,000 calories a day. Dietarily, physically, I think I can get it done without too much issue. Now, keeping up with things as small as washing, living, getting out videos every day, and then the evidence, I need to have a GPS coordinates every single day from start to finish, and then start again at the last day's finish line, and then have a videos at least 10 minutes a day of where I am, landmarks, so they can see I'm not bullshitting, which is fair. You know, I wouldn't believe someone if they said they did it without all this evidence. Brought to you by Suroti. You know what? They didn't pay for this. Brought to you by Vlita. That's what I've been eating more than anything these days. Then you also have to take a logbook. So you have to take like a book and have all your, have any witnesses. If you went to a restaurant that day, have them sign the book and write a phone number or an email so that Guinness can say, were they really here? Then if they give you a receipt, which they do in Greece always, you got to staple that in or glue it in or take a photo, right? So everything everything is recorded, which is really cool, actually. I respect it. Which will be a lot of fun. In terms of lining up a charity, I really thought about this because I wanted to be something I really care about that I think, you know, needs help and can maybe make a real difference. I kind of thought about some of the major cancers and foundations. I didn't have any grandparents, so it wasn't a big thing for me. Now, my parents, obviously, they're orphans when they were young, but for me, one thing that always catches my eye, I've already made a piece on, was the fires in Greece. They're just rampant and they're getting worse, and it's a structural issue in our government. My dad was a firefighter in Kithira, and Kithira gets burnt basically every year or two. I think it's a problem that it isn't even a specific political party that is the problem, because they've all been in power the last 20 years, and every year for 20 years it's gotten worse. It's a structural issue with the government. So, you know, I think I want to find something, a charity or cause that supports the families of the firefighters. So, yeah, that's kind of the plan. So a lot of planning still to go into that. But we are about 2 months away. So first things first, let's do a great comedy show. Second things second, let's do this triathlon. Third things third, let's march across Greece, raise some money for a good cause, and get a world record. So that's what's on my brain. Besides that, it's taken me back this last month has definitely put me in a military mindset. And everyone knows I love my history, and alluding to many military metaphors, but I did cadets in Australia for 5 years, 4 years, and I learned so much from that. Honestly, I went to one of the best schools in Australia, and the actual teaching, the teachers, I can honestly say I didn't learn anything. The discipline of the school was good. I learned from that. I learned from maybe one or two good teachers. Marco Scali, a goated, absolute legendary history teacher. Mr. Fitzsimmons, Craig Fitzsimmons. He was a great science teacher, physics teacher. Actually got me excited about studying. Mr. Mountain, rest in peace, absolute legend. He got me to study for maths and proved to myself that I can actually work and study and get stuff done. Number four, Mr. Carl Watson, who was my economics teacher and let me ditch school to meet mentors, like, and put me in touch with like successful people who left the school, people who actually cared, basically. All the other teachers and some in particular, were not just bad, they were letdowns. And they backstabbed me to advance their career, which is a wild thing to say, but it's 100% true. If you want to know who, I'll tell you. Because, yeah, it's crazy how these schools and I've always been surprised about how academia is so politicized. Glad I didn't go to university. But even when I do talks at universities, it's crazy. But cadets, now that was an institution I loved. I loved it. And Jordan Peterson says that entrepreneurs have the exact opposite disposition to a soldier. And cadets is not soldiery, I understand. But, it, you know, this is an institution, the Newington Cadets, the Newington College Cadets, and Newington College served in multiple wars, the Boer Wars, World War One, etc. Maybe World War Two, I'm not sure. But the institution of Newington College Cadets is legit. The training that I did, by the sound of it, much more legitimate than the Greek army, since all I hear is that they have coffees and smoke cigarettes all day. Cadets, the CUO course was actually hard. Like, I had to get myself into shape. I actually had to study. I actually had to lead 25 kids through the bloody forest, bush, multiple times. Like, it was hard. Enough. Not impossible, but it was hard. And I have some of my best, not just school memories, but life memories, are in cadets. And I'll tell you a few of these stories. So the first story was my first cadet camp when I was like 15, 16, maybe 15. I was in B14, I think. And the cadet leader, the CUO of our platoon, was, I know, some white guy, I forget his name. But he kept playing around and doing my like years, basically. And he got kicked out of the cadets. You know, the whole year we're doing training on this every second Friday or every Friday at school. But at the end of the year, you go on camp in the bush for like 10 days. And he got kicked out of the cadets just before that camp. So we had a guy called Tam Tang who knew nothing about mapping or being a leader, to be honest. And so we got Tam Tang and we go on this first trek. All the 20 boys, 20 15-year-old boys, and then three 16-year-olds and one 18-year-old or 17-year-old. We're trekking, the first trek. And the instructions, I would later find out when I did the CUO course, are pretty clear as to how to not get lost. And if you do at least a little bit of mapping and have some common sense and some decent maths, you can get the job done. And even if you get lost, you just radio in and keep your GPS on and you're fine. This guy got us so lost. We were the most lost in all of the cadet unit's history. 150 years of Newington College cadets, we got more lost than anyone in all of history. They'd bring the fucking helicopter out. We were stuck on a ledge, on a cliff that we called Peach Fuzz for some reason. And we're there singing at like 2, 3 a.m. And the whole platoon, or the whole cadet corps, which is like 1,000 people across this massive, massive expanse of bush, are like listening on the radio to this B-14, how lost we got. And we trekked so far all day, and then we had to trek further and then up to this, to Peach Fuzz Cliff, and then we had to trek out when they found. I remember Mr. Watson, the same teacher who was my economics teacher, who helped me with my career. He was one of the leaders in the cadet corps. No surprise, because he was a stoic legend. And he came and we're singing, we're all like half asleep dying of dehydration. It wasn't that bad. And then he just had a bar. They all had like, they were giving us chocolate. We're like, what the fuck? Chocolate? Where'd you get chocolate from? But like, I realized how we were so hungry. We needed the sugar to get out of there. And then we got out of there. And I remember trekking, my legs were so sore trekking out of there. And then I got to, we got to the camp, and I remember they had all the batches, all the rations. It's like shepherd's pie. It was shepherd's pie, all dusty. It's like dust ration. You just add hot water. And they're like, it's ready, just eat. I'm like, fuck yeah. And I took one spoonful. They didn't mix it. So I took a spoonful of dried, just dusty shepherd's pie, which was disgusting. Disgusting. I was like, like eating a spoonful of cinnamon. So that was my first day of being in the cadets. A year later, Jack Tiftis, Greek Australian kid, not that he knew any Greek, was my CUA. Now I was one of the three sergeants. I was one of the three sergeants, 16-year-old sergeants, and we were leading the 20. And this is when I started the CUA course, the leadership course. And then we're leading, you know, Jack Tiftis is that 17, 18-year-old CUO. I'm one of the three sergeants, and then 20, you know, idiot kids. And the first day again, we get lost, right? You're not supposed to come across a road. When you're not supposed to come across a road and you come across a road, you know you fucked up. You know you don't know where the fuck you are. Then you have to triangulate your location, which Jack didn't know how to do. And I remember we're walking down, before we got lost, we were walking. We're like, oh, I remember that rock. Oh, I remember this thing. And we later found out we weren't even in the same maybe 20, 50 kilometers, let alone the same rock, like so delusional. Like, because when you're in the bush, everything looks the same. And you have this familiarity complex, like, oh, I know where I am, I'm in control. You don't know. And I remember we caught ourselves like, oh, this leaf looks familiar. Bro, you don't know the leaf. Forget about it. So we got lost again, but I think I was called B16. I could be wrong. I wonder if they have the archives or this stuff. And then it was my turn. I guess it was 3 years of the leadership course. It was year 12. I'm a CUO now. I went on a CUO. So they do a CUO camp. So you do all the leadership courses and all that extra time. And then you do... You do your CUO camp. CUO camp... the CEO camp is a 7 to 10 day camp where you go with all the other people who want to be CEOs. Now there's only 20 spots, and I think there was maybe 30, 35 of us, maybe just 30. And all the tests that we've done for like the last 2 years, they add up to who becomes a CEO. And then this camp is like a kind of an actual practical test. Marching, they test us, all this different stuff, like so much harder than what the standard Greek army sounds like, to be honest. And you actually learn leadership skills, which was fantastic. I think that's actually the biggest thing I learned from Newington College. So we went on a 7 to 10 day camp. They take us we do a 3K run, which I actually trained for. It was like the first running thing I trained for, because that's what got me into running. This, you got to do a 3K run. And I was so slow, it's not even funny. Even though I'd swum my whole life, I was not good at running because I was a little gifted with short legs. So I actually ran heaps from 15. That's when I did my first quarter marathon, and kind of the craziness started there. Now I'm walking across the country like a malaka. So we did this 7 to 10 day camp. And so anyway, they blindfold us, they put us in cars, and then they drive us into the bush, 1 kilometer apart from each other. So we're alone for 7 days. We're not allowed to speak for 7 to 10 days. And I fucking loved it. Oh my God, are you crazy? I could be by myself for a week in the bush doing my like, yes, they gave us enough rations of water. My like, oh my God, fantastic. I had a ball. The time flew by. I slept all day. I slept all night. I was building malakias. I built a water catchment thing. I was having showers. I was built a house. I built a chair, a table. Oh my God, I was having a ball. I was tanning all day. I was doing a workout 2-3 times a day. I had the best time. And then they did this little test, right? And they did this test where I think it was Mr. Watson. I don't know. I imagine, I can't even, no, maybe it wasn't. I can't remember. I think it was maybe the visual arts teacher that hated me. I can't remember anymore. And they come in on, it's like a seven, let's say it's a 7 day alone, 7 days alone. And they come, some guy comes in on like the 5th day. And I remember, you're not allowed to speak. So I see him, I'm like, he's like, he comes up with a phone, like a GPS phone. He goes, do you want to call your mom, your dad, family, girlfriend, friends? I start laughing. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Get out of here. I don't want to ruin my day.
I didn't call them to chuck it para ponés. Fuck, get the fuck out of here. No, bro. So I was like, no, thanks. I didn't say anything. He's like, are you sure? I'm like, I see, man, bro, get the fuck out. Bro, I want my peace and quiet. I'm here having a ball. I'm going to have other people ruin it. Fuck that. However, that was actually a test, which I happened to pass. Because apparently, most of the boys, I think only one or two others, didn't want to call someone. But that's actually a test they took from the SAS test, where if, when you're doing something hard, you should be locked in, basically. And I still kind of like that. Like, even to this day, if I'm doing something difficult, like training for a triathlon, training two times a day, and starting a new business, it's like, get off social media. Like, I don't need to be talking to everyone all the time, every day. Like, I don't. Seriously, what's the point? Like, my friends know when to contact me, and we will talk once a month. And anyone outside of that, like, sometimes it's just completely unnecessary. People know when to contact me, and it's a quick phone call. I don't need to be texting someone every single day. Like, it's a bit barak, señor. It's a bit over the top. Like, give me a break. Sometimes you just got to lock in with a bit of solitude, and I think that was part of the lesson. So I passed that test. So then it was my turn to lead. So now I'm leading 20 kids and 3 sergeants. And not now, at the same time, I just left home. So I was semi-homeless, living in my car, not bouncing between places. And I crashed my car, and I had to finish my exams for school, and my business was good and then failing, so I'm trying to fix that. And then a camp was a vacation. So we go on camp, and you're supposed to shave every little hair off. And at this point, I had enough of every fucking authority. I wasn't listening to anybody. So anyway, I start the trek, and I know all the maps off by heart. I know all the tracks off by heart, everything. Like, I actually researched, and I actually did a good job of researching. And although my platoon had 2 or 3 troublemakers, one was some WOG kid, and one was like some white kid. And I knew how to deal with them. And the whole year, I was tough but fair. I'd be like, you fuck up, do 20 push-ups. Do this, do that. And they would actually do it. Like, they respected me. I would let them do whatever they want. I don't care. Just do the work. And then if you're getting punished, you're getting punished. So on camp, they would love it. I told them all, hey, listen, you're not allowed to bring any contraband. You're not allowed to bring any contraband. So bring this contraband. Bring lollies, bring spaghetti, dried spaghetti, bring dried fruit, dried nuts. And then, because I'm CEO, they don't check my bag, but they check your bag. I will take all of the platoon's contraband, hide it under my bag, my top, when they do the check. I take 25% commission, and then you get it back. But you carry my 25% in your backpack, right? It's like feudalism. I took them back to the 18th, to the 15th century. And they were like, yeah. And then everyone passed the contraband check. I was like, yeah. They're like, the teacher said, it was the short lady math teacher. She said, your boys didn't bring any contraband. Good work. I'm like, hey, you know, I enforce the rules. You know me. And then I'm eating lollies every day like a king, just catching in my mouth. Oh, yeah, bring me those spaghetti rolls. Yeah, give me the cinnamon bun. It was legendary. And we would cut corners. Like, I go, boys, listen, if you want to enjoy camp and you don't want it to be torturous, one, listen to exactly what I say so you can be as, you can have as much fun as possible, but be as lazy as possible and do as little as possible. But when you go to work, you go to work. And they did. They listened. They realized, oh, we can have contraband if we listen. And we just have to do the thing that when we have to do the thing, listen to George. Like, they really believed I had their best interest. And I did. Like, I wanted them to have a lot of fun. I'm like, I told them this will be, I remember I was in class. I told them this will be the best experience maybe of your life, to be honest. And if you want to really have fun,
follow what I say so that you can bring a contraband, you can run around, you can have the most free time, you can actually enjoy the trek, you can sing the fucking marching songs, and we can cheat, we can steal the food from the other bloody, what's it called, platoons. And it's so weird because I surprisingly didn't have that many friends in high school. My friends Jack Jacobs and Terry Cristoforo, who my friends from year seven, my first friends in year seven were Sam Gilfeder, who was a white Aussie bloke, and then the year later, I think as soon as he realized, like, I'm a wog, disowned me as a friend, right? And then year eight, it was Jack Jacobs and Terry Cristoforo, which I was already kind of friends with, and Dion Riotto. And Jack and Terry, my friends from like year seven all the way to year 11. And then year 12, one summer from being through like fucking best buds, they just dropped me. Dropped me as friends. And it was at the exact same time that everyone was going for leadership roles at the school, like head prefect of the school thing. And it was like 1 week, we were best buds. I'm at their house. I was did an internship at his dad's thing. We were having sleepovers, blah, 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 to Minecraft, playing Minecraft, to talking every day, to just completely cut me off. And I one day I said, I confronted him. I'm like, bro, you fucking completely cut me off a friend. You won't even reply to my messages. What's wrong? What's up? What the hell changed? It's weird. He said, bro, I don't know what you're talking about. And I remember saying, like, bro, I don't want to be seen hanging around you. Like, he didn't want to be seen hanging around me because he thought people wouldn't vote for him for house captain, prefect, school leader thing, which is a wild thing to do, which sucked. But to be honest, I had a lot more shit going on in my life at home that was a bigger issue. And then in a year after school finished, he apologized. I was like, yeah, no problem. But always I was friends with the WOGs, the Greek kids. Papa, Mavris, Lardis. Ioana was there, but not really. And Zavos, but he wasn't there. Not really. It was mainly Mavris, Lardis, and Papa and I. People who were just unashamedly Greek, to be honest. Everyone else was like, oh, I don't want to hang out with the Greeks. Because they have a bad reputation. But what the fuck? Okay. Well, one of us did. But the rest of us were fine. But yeah, like, it's so weird, friends in high school. Dion Riotto was my friend the whole way through. It's a shame we don't really talk anymore. But the funny thing is about school, you know, high school or maybe university too, you make friends. There's circumstantial friends and then there's real friends. Are you friends because you went to the same school and you were in the same class, or you're the same ethnicity, which I is not really a great reason to be friends? Or do you actually have something proper in common? I mean, the same ethnicity, same religion is something in common. But, like, it goes deeper than that, you know? You have shared experiences. That's a big thing. But after a while, you just realize, like, sometimes you just don't have that much in common with a person. And you kind of lose that friendship and it kind of ends. But, you know, it is what it is. I went to school with 250 kids in my year, and I went into that school with the same friends that I left that school with. I speak to nobody from Newington College except for the one friend I went into Newington College with, Christos, because we were friends before that. Not circumstantial friends, we were real friends, we're brothers. But I would rather have no friends or not have friends anymore than people who are just circumstantial friends who were with you because of why you're here. And I remember when I left Australia, I wrote a list when I moved to Bali of all the people that I thought I would keep in contact with. This is how delusional I was. I had 30 people on that list. And every single one, I would make sure to call or message once a month. And then after a while, they would stop replying. Right, well, they stopped picking up my calls. And by the end of the year, guess how many people were left on that list? Four people. And I think, unfortunately, I'm, like I said, you probably know anyone who does actually listen to this podcast. I'm not that tight with my family, but you'd be surprised how few people actually give a shit about you. It's unfortunately true. Yeah, do they just care because you're there? Or do they actually care? Because if you disappeared, how many people would really give a fuck? I disappeared. 4 people gave a fuck. And even then. So I think sometimes a reality check of who your friends really are is a good idea. Are they your friends because they're getting something from you, or are they just circumstantial? Get rid of the bad ones, because the good ones you can really have deep, deep friendships with and have great stories with. And that's kind of, to get back to my point, cadets is one of those things where, in a beautiful way, you're having very fun experiences, deep, hard. You're doing something hard, which is good to do with friends. With people who actually you're not that close to, and you probably never speak to again. And it's that weird thing, the last cadet camp, it's like, oh shit, I'm never going to speak to these people again. Like, part of you's like, not that you know that, but you're like, am I ever going to really hang out with these people from school again? Or is this like one of the last experiences? And you kind of know that it is one of the last experiences you have. And that's what I kind of said, this kind of a spiel, but less mature and wise, not that I am, to the kids before we went on camp. I go, this is going to be the best part of your childhood, maybe life. So do what I say and you're going to have even more fun. And they did. They brought the contraband. I took my commission. They marched. And I told them, when we march, we march. And when we fuck around, we fuck around. So when we march, I remember we were cheating one day. Ow. I remember Lewis Ulm, named after the Ulm River in Germany, where it was a famous battle in the Holy Roman Empire. He was a twin with another guy called Lewis and Clark. It's not Clark, I'm joking. Anyway, Lewis and some other kid. I like Lewis more. The other guy was too monotone. Now, Lewis, his platoon left base 1 hour before my platoon, right? But I planned to cheat the whole time. So instead of going like this and around, I was going like this and through a camp with his teachers. But you know me, I'm like a assassin. I can be very quiet, very quiet. So I told the boys after they left, we walked. So we waited an hour, then we walked 100 meters so the teachers couldn't see us. I go, boys, we're cheating today. And if you follow my rules, we're going to cut 4 hours off our trek, get to the next base 2 early before the second platoon, and we can fuck around at a waterfall for like a couple hours, or like chill out and eat and just sunbathe and just kick rocks, right? And they're like, we're in. I go, then I need 100% of your discipline and focus. They're like, we're in. I go, okay. So we beeline for this road, right? Now, Lewis, we get onto this road and my boys are lined up. I'm leading. And they're in 2 lines behind me. And they're left, 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 right. Like, perfect. And I can feel it. And I don't even have to say left, 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 left. And I could just, yes. And these are boys who are troublemakers, but they're in line. It was lit. It was the best feeling. And then Lewis's ragtag bunch of scoundrels are all littered about. Their uniforms all fucked up. And they're not in line. They're not marching. They just see me. My boys are silent. They're silent. And then I'm just like, you lose. I see Lewis. I go, hold. And boom. And they stopped. Then I stopped. Then they just stare at attention. I go, Lewis, my brother, how you doing? He's like, yo, what the fuck? Your platoon is so disciplined. I go, hey, bro, you know me. He goes, by the way, why are you here? You're going the opposite direction, and how did you catch up to us? I'm like, look, we're very disciplined, as you can see. We're very good. He's like, all right. I go, all right, boys, let's keep going. And one of the things I told the boys was,
do not be a rat. Do not be a snitch. Because if one of my 20 boys, 23, including the three sergeants, if one of my boys talks with one of the other platoon kids, even if he's his friends, because the platoons are randomized, if they talk, then I'm going to get in trouble. Not that I really care, but I don't want to get in trouble. And it's a competition. Whoever gets there first wins, you get points, blah, blah, blah. No one snitched. How crazy is that? And there were two or three boys who didn't like me in this platoon. They didn't like my autocratic leadership regime, but they still did what they were told, and they did not snitch. And I taught them, by the way, another thing I taught them was how to, like, this black market of contraband that they would have, all the lollies and malakias that they brought, how to go and negotiate and trade. I said, we were there. We were just savages, savage traders, just getting the best resources from all the other platoons. Anyway, so then we continued to march past Lewis's platoon, and I was just like, this is the best. I think about it to this day, how cool we marched past this other platoon. And then, so we were supposed to go like this whole loop around, which is a 4 or 5 hour loop, right? Or we could go straight through a farm, a field, sorry, where the RSM, Lachlan Cameron was the RSM. Funny kid, he was in a couple of my classes. Crazy kid. He was crazy white guys who, like, they'll climb a tree naked. That's him, right? That's Lachlan Cameron, but he's a good kid. So he was RSM, which is the guy who's in charge of the discipline, which is wild because he's the least... Well, he's pretty disciplined. He's just a crazy kid. So anyway, he's sleeping during the day, which is what the RSM does. And we needed to sneak through this field so we could cut this corner, right? And I go to the boys. And so we had to... Oh, my God. I forgot this part. We had to go straight down a cliff, basically. A super steep cliff. It's all forested. There's all vines and shit everywhere, right? And so I'm there hacking away at all these vines and all this stuff. And these boys are going, taking their bag off to go down super steep. And then there's a paved road. So we're in this gully, like on our backs. I'm like, let's go, let's go, let's go. And with the whole thing, we didn't go one by one over. We just went 20 people to the other side, right? And then we just stealthily went through. Oh my God, it was the best thing I've ever done in my life. And I wish we had phones back then. I guess we did. They just weren't not allowed. And then we go through this field. And we're at one gate of the field. We had to cross a 200-meter gate, right? I felt like I was in World War II, Normandy, going from French barn to French barn. And like, okay, boys. And I would shake them, right? I would shake them and say, I'm like, bro, I can hear your knife and your fork rattling. Put it together. Put a sock in your metal plates so they don't bang against each other, because then the RSM is going to hear you. That's how fucking good we were, right? So then I will shake them. I'm like, okay, good. And then I'll tell them, run across. And then one by one, we run across very, very, very quietly. Then I was the last one. I opened the gate. I closed the gate. I got to the other side. And then we got past. And then we had to sneak around the actual teachers who ran the whole show. And we did that too. We were like ducking, like, and then we came out. Then there was the part where that hook part. There was this one hook part where, like, if you went the whole way around and back down, you would have come out from this side. So we had to sneak around them and then come out. However, and who do you think you're talking to? You're talking to George motherfucking Moulos, yeah? Come, if you did the full loop, if you actually did the full trek and you came down the hill that you're supposed to come down, it's all sandy and dusty, right? And I knew they would have said, hey, wait a second, you guys are not dirty at all. So what did I do? I go, boys, roll around in the dirt for a second here. Come on, who do you think you're talking to? I'm the fucking king. I'm like, boys, roll around in the dirt. We've got dirt all over us, because I've done that one trek before. So then I'm like, boys, when I say go, because they would have seen us come down the hill, right? So if I need to tell the boys to line up really quickly for a second when they're not looking. So they're like, oh, I guess I didn't see you come down, right? So I go, 31 boys, march. And then they come into the two files behind me. Left, 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 right, left. B-14 reporting for duty. And then they're like, oh, that was quick. You're like 3 hours early. We're like, hey, you know, we're good. You know what I'm saying? They're like, you went the whole way around. I'm like, yeah. And I, you had to also like say the coordinates. I cheated so professionally. They're like, yeah, that makes sense. Totally. Like, your boy's got to be dirty coming down there. I'm like, yeah, yeah, you know these boys. You know that cliff's crazy. They're like, yeah, all right. Well, go swim in the river, tidy up. There's some custard there. I remember we would always steal the custard of the other platoon. So yeah, super, super fun to know the rules really well and then cheat. But yeah, let's wrap it up there. That was a fun little story. Another Gringlish episode done. And now I have the next month or two will probably be the craziest month or two of my life in terms of work and physical work and dieting. So you will be hearing a lot more from me about that process. So anyway, great episode. I'll talk to you next week.